Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Are you a podcaster? Or a future podcaster? Then you should know about Acast. The world's best podcasters work with Acast, including the one you're listening to right now. And anyone can join and start podcasting with us. It's easy. We have everything you need to host and grow your show and share it across every podcast app out there. And you know what else? You can make money from it too. Visit acast.com/hosting to find out more and get started for free. Acast, for the stories.
I'm magician Nelson Lugo.
Hi, I'm nerdcore rapper Shafa the Dark Lord.
We're best friends
who hate each other's guts.
And we co-host The Epic Podcast,
a monthly show in which we discuss comic books,
video games,
television,
movies,
our debilitating emotional problems,
and Batman.
So much Batman.
That's The Epic Podcast
on the Nerdy Show Podcast Network.
Be safe, internets.
Bye. Seriously, so much Batman.
The following episode of Flame On is presented by the Nerdy Show Network.
Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by a comic shop.
Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination.
And with the generous support of listeners like you.
To learn how you can support this and other fine geeky programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
What's going on, everybody? Pat DeBear here, and we are back again with another microsode for your eardrums. I'm gonna break the fourth podcasting wall and say that we are late on this episode because the day we are recording it is the day that you might be listening to it, because this episode was supposed to go out yesterday, but I have had a new job start 3 weeks ago. I finished 3 weeks, 15 days into working at this job. By day 12 or 13, I was already training other people, and I'm still in my training phase. So I am proud of myself and what I have done and learned and picked up so far. And, you know, but at the same time, I'm also exhausted as fuck when I get home. So we haven't had a chance to meet and record. So we're recording this. It's Saturday morning and or afternoon for some of our cast members, early morning for some of our other ones. Depending on the time zone we are all situated in. But we are here and we are going to chat. And then this episode is going to go out later this evening. So if you're listening to this when it drops on Saturday night, then it's same day listening. Look at that turnaround time. It won't happen like this often. Trust and believe. But we will be getting back onto our regular every other Friday with some additional Friday content coming your way. We got to get Brian on editing down some of his interviews, and you're going to be hearing some audio versions of some Rainbow Spotlights on our off weeks coming up. So pretty soon you'll be getting some Flame On in your ears every week for a limited time, just while we get some of that content out. To our Patreon subscribers out there, hello. We are, I think, all caught up on our thank yous. BJ and I have already started talking a little bit, and we are finalizing our new Patreon levels. So y'all will hear this. We're all talking about this. So June 1st is the 10-year anniversary of Flame On as
oh
a
my
show.
God.
10 Woo. Years, a decade of flames. Flames on the side of your ears.
Wow.
Right. Face. Side of my face. Heaving. Breathing. Heaving.
I mean, you know, it made more sense to be the ears because it's, you know, we're in their
the
ears.
Podcast. Yeah.
Not they can't see yet. It. That's why my tits are out.
Just wait till we do a live stream, like another house party like we did back when I first moved up here.
Oh my god. Can we please do that?
Oh my god, that was like a year ago. That's crazy that this is the last time that we did like a full cast like live stream. I know we like Eric, Brian, and I have done some live streams for like our Drag Race recaps, our Ru caps. Speaking of Ru girls, and I know we kind of there was a season 10 mention in the Say Their Names when we were just chatting before we started recording. But I actually shared an elevator for four floors with the Vixen in face.
Oh,
yes. Say Their Names. Too Vague was in the elevator with me. Obi looked fantastic. Was wearing a gold crown, like the pink and blue ones that I have. I was like, I love your crown. Aww. Anyway, just a little digression there. But we're going to be getting those new tiers on our 10th anniversary, June 1st. You're going to be able to have new Patreon tiers. So in the next week, we're going to be putting them out there. That'll give about a 2-week run up to June 1st. So if you would like to switch over, and then we'll go about 2 months with both sets of tiers open to give people time to decide which tier they want to, so they can unsubscribe from the tiers that are going away and hop on board our new tiers. So I promise those are coming up. Those will probably be about a week after this drops. You will start to see those go up on Patreon, and we'll put them out on our social media as well. So
I feel like BJ needs his own tier, and it's just called Tears for Fears.
Oh, yes.
And then he can write his own nightmares for the people subscribed at that tier. Oh, I feel like that would be
two sentence horror stories.
Yeah, I think you'd enjoy that.
Okay, so I've been listening to Gayest Episode Ever, and one of the things is if you subscribe at the $3 or higher level, you get a compliment from the compliment box, and I feel like this is like the bizarro version of that. I like it.
I can do horoscopes when I know nothing about astrology.
Oh, Jesus.
Horoscopes?
Pisces, they're watching you. Drink more water.
It'll be just like the Weird Al song.
two ounces, 2.5 fluid ounces. No more, no less. Or else.
My God! So, starting this new job, I bought myself. I was like, I'm gonna be a little healthier, a little, not a ton. Vegetables still aren't a thing in my life yet. But only. Oh my God! I didn't even hit the soundboard.
If there's one thing that I can do that sound for, it's you and the vegetable thing.
That was the soundboard. It sounded so much the same. I love it. Unless I'm eating, there's a certain like Campbell soup that's a beef and vegetable one. I love that soup.
So much sodium.
Hi, have you not met me?
I know. Your body is
next to me.
The alcohol and the sodium. But I am glad you're drinking more water. Do you have a Hydro Flask?
I don't know what
this thing is. The Hydro Flask. It's like those big, thick, whatever, and they got the little spout. These are great.
So, yeah. That one's, is that metal?
Yeah, like aluminum or something. Yeah.
It's, okay. So I bought one. It's not in the room with me, but I bought one. It's similar. It's like a thick plastic, and it's got little markings on it. It's a 32-ounce bottle, and then it's got you can open one side, and it's like the wide mouth, so you can just, you know, chug. And then the other one, like, you pop up, and it's the straw. So you have the two options, and I fucking love the straw part, because as I'm sitting at my desk at work, and I'm doing modules or I'm doing stuff, I can literally just pick it up and like sip on it like it's a, you know, like it's a soda. And my office that I work at now has it's a fancy schmancy water cooler, because it's not like a, like one with like the big jug up top and you like pull the little thing. Like, it's all internal, and then it's got like the push button, and it is so cold. Like, it is really, really cold water. And I feel like it tricks my mouth into thinking that I'm like having soda, because the soda is always in the fridge and it's always cold. And like, it's made me drink a lot more. So I've did calculations and realized that 4 of those 32-ounce bottles is a gallon of water. So in the course of the 3 weeks, I've actually built up to pretty much a gallon a day. And yesterday I drank 1.25 gallons of water in my workday. Now I have to pee every 20 minutes, which is an unfortunate side effect.
Yeah, that's not fun.
And when you have a 40-minute drive home, and about halfway through, you're just like, God damn, I gotta get home. It's kind of frustrating.
But so can I tell you recently, and I'm 44, getting close to the magic 45, but it is a very weird sensation as you get older, because your ability to not urinate on yourself, like when you have to go, when you're younger, no issues. Everything's fine. You can hold it for days. You're like a camel, right? But as you get older and you're a man, and women may have a different situation, I don't know, but if you're a man, that prostate does change. And the ability to not wet yourself, not like full on, like, you know, I'm an old man, like I need a diaper wet myself, but the ability to not like leak a little, it gets a lot harder. I'm just saying, this is your future. Old people, young children, young men watching, listening, whatever, this is your future. So do your Kegels or whatever the male prostate thing.
Kegels is definitely the answer to that.
Do whatever you need to do. Work that prostate. Get worked. I don't know, but...
Now that Eric has crossed the magic threshold and is now...
Eric, are you in the water sports too? It's okay.
Eric has crossed into a new decade. He's now older, well older than I am. Because I think the last time, did I leave it in the episode? I might have cut it out when we were talking about Eric's birthday, because I didn't want people to potentially be able to stalk Eric that way. But Eric is not crossing.
Bring on the stalkers. I don't care.
No, as I say, Eric, my little stalkers. What are you talking about?
Right? Like,
if you're gonna stalk Eric, here's what you got to do. Just stalk him in a way that encourages him to do Twitch. Like, get him.
I was going to say, do not stalk him by sitting waiting for his Twitch to start, because it still hasn't. His Twitch account is sitting alone in the VIP.
Oh. I need to get back on mine. I'm off my schedule completely.
Oh, honey, I haven't even... Well, other than the Rainbow Spotlight, I can't even tell you the last time I did any kind of Japanese or gaming or anything on Twitch. It's been forever. But I miss it. I do. Oh,
and Brian, you'll be happy to know I beat Carrion. Oh, so you now done with
that nightmare game.
Yeah, I've moved on to Dream Daddy. Everybody voted for Dream Daddy.
So there's another game. Dream Daddy's great. We've talked about it. There's another game that's like Robin Hood-esque, but it's got nudity and like sex. And the problem is, as much as I would love to play it, you can't play it on Twitch because of the nudity and the sex. So I need the Twitch alternative. It's like the whatever, so I can do that.
I know exactly. You can they do live. I think you can do live streaming on OnlyFans. Like no joke. Totally do it. Like you can stream adult games.
I think you're right. I think that's. Oh God, I have to set up an OnlyFans.
Yeah, there's a friend of mine. A friend of mine was just like, I want to do a Twitch, but like. He's like, I don't wear clothes when I game. So like, what do I do? And I was like, OnlyFans does like, I think it does streaming. You should totally do that. And he's like,
that's so funny.
Are you serious? And I was like, yeah, do it. There's an audience for it somewhere.
Oh, sure.
If your friend isn't standing up and doesn't have female presenting nipples, then they'd be fine, because you can't take your clothes off during a stream. Like, it can be flagged for stripping if you even just remove your like your shirt while you're on your stream, and you can't have lower body genitalia showing, and you can't have female presenting nipples. I'm sure that, I don't think they have it phrased as that, but I felt like ever since Tumblr gave us female presenting nipples, that it just
female presenting nipples.
It's just the gift that keeps on giving when referencing, you know.
Well, I think he chatterbaits a lot, so I'm pretty sure he wants people to see all of him. So I told him just do it on OnlyFans.
Oh God, do I know this person?
Maybe. Oh, I don't
we'll
think
we'll talk after it's okay.
Yeah,
too vague. Say. Give out their chatterbait handle. Oh, no, sorry. All right. So y'all have heard the voices. Brian is here.
Hi. Thank you.
In soundboard form and in person. BJ is here.
Hi.
And so is Eric.
Howdy.
I think that we had an episode recently. I think it was you, me, it was me, BJ, and Eric. And I think we got into something like this where we were just chatting, and I never introduced everybody.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And I was just like, okay, whatever.
I think we were on the one-ups, and I was just like, he didn't introduce us. Oh, well.
I realized it in post as I was editing, and I was like, oh, well.
How will they know?
So we are here. It is a microsode. We have a topic for you. One that that we have talked about briefly on a roundup episode. It was BJ's topic. And as with WandaVision, BJ brought it up on the initial show. And now we are sitting here to do a full roundup microsode about it. Minus Oral, because Oral didn't care about this one as much as WandaVision. And our fans, especially our longtime fans, would have strung us up by our balls. Some of us might be into that if Oral was not part of the WandaVision episode. So we are here to talk about the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which is now, with that final title card, spoiler alert, Captain America and the Winter Soldier. Sadly, even though Bucky grew and has hopefully now gone through his therapy, court-mandated therapy, is still technically the Winter Soldier. He doesn't get to be the White Wolf. So, poor Bucky Barnes. And I wouldn't have realized that. I wouldn't have put that connection until I watched Ryan George's pitch meeting for Screen Rant. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And he was like, so, wasn't his arc to not be the Winter Soldier anymore? Why wouldn't his name change on that final credit? Womp, womp, womp. But the Falcon. I always wanted to say Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I'm not used to calling him the Falcon. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Well, he's not the Falcon anymore, so you don't have to worry about it.
This is true. This is true. Although Red Wing is still there, which I love. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier is an American television miniseries created by Malcolm Spellman for the streaming service Disney Plus. It's based on the Marvel Comics character Sam Wilson, a.k.a. Falcon, and Bucky Barnes, a.k.a. the Winter Soldier. Set in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, sharing continuity with the films of the franchise. The events of the series take place after the film Avengers Endgame in 2019, and the series was produced by Marvel Studios, with Spellman serving as head writer and Kari Skoglund directing. I feel very inadequate when we start talking about things now that I've listened to Gayest Episode Ever, because Drew seems to go into so much detail to like describe the shows. Sometimes I feel like too much, but I'm like, we don't do enough. So I wanted to read a description about the show.
It's a weird balance because like I've listened to shows where they do this whole plot recap, and it's like there are people who do listen to these shows because they don't have the time and they still want to keep up.
Yeah.
Or they don't have Disney Plus, but they want to keep up. So they want to know like what happened. But it's like, I don't want to know what happened. I watched the fucking show. So tell me what you think of it, because that's why I'm here. So it's a weird balance to try to keep both the sets. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because I do that. So I do that with some video games and Wikipedia. I will totally go to Wikipedia and read the entire plot. Like Resident Evil Village just came out, and I straight up went.
Oh, is that a Resident Evil game? I wondered what Village was. I was like, what the fuck is this game?
Village. It's Resident Evil 8.
Yeah.
Aha.
So the VIII is the VI, and then part of the L's.
Roman numerals.
But when I get that way where I'm like, I know I want to play this, but I really don't have time, and it's going to be when it's in the bargain bin like 10 years from now where I actually decide to pick it up, just like I did with Resident Evil 7. It was like a free game on PlayStation Network, but I literally already knew the plot. I just didn't know any of the mechanics or anything, like how the plot got there. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to just look this up on Wikipedia so I can keep up with the story. And then I'll come back to it when I can come back to it to see all the action and fun. So that's probably why people are, you know, will listen to the bits, the podcasts and whatnot that are like, so previously on Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Yeah. And like, I was listening to my, to our friends, Media Meltdown. They have a live stream. They may turn to a podcast called Cannon Fodder, which if you're interested, go to Media Meltdown on Twitch. It's every other Thursday or something now. But yeah, Piranha, who hosts it, like, she does this thing where it's like this fine line, and she sort of like goes through and sort of narrates what happens for a bit, and then the chat will respond, and like it kind of works. So I don't know. I just find it unnecessary. But again, for me, not for other people who want to know. So yes, the plot of this show, if you've been in a closet.
So, I mean, I figured I'd give a little bit of background and give some props to Malcolm Spellman for adapting the show and bringing it to Disney Plus, because it is a very focused, from the Falcon perspective of this show, it's a very focused look at that world in 2023, I think, is where the 5-year jump landed them. So I think it was 2018, and five years later in Endgame. Yeah. So it brought
the blip.
After the blip. Or the Snapture. Honestly, Glenn Weldon's coining of the term Snapture,
that's great,
is my favorite description of it. I hate the blip, but you know.
Snapture is pretty great.
Snapture is amazing. So in 2023, but I mean, that's 2 years ahead of where we are. And with a focus on what 2020 brought us, and really that kind of taking a deeper look at racism in America and the world, and really kind of the struggles of the Black community. And for it to be a person of color bringing this type of show to a platform, to Disney, to a platform like Disney Plus, to something as large and such a part of the cultural zeitgeist as the MCU, that's huge. And to have Anthony Mackie as Falcon be the first name in this, to be that head of, you know, like that central character, it really is a huge thing, and it's definitely something that should be called out. So I wanted to at least give a little shout out to it, and give a little, here's what this show is, before we dive into what we thought about the episodes.
So they also had an all Black writers room, if I'm not mistaken, as a thing for the show. And as much as it does a fantastic job of sort of addressing some of the historical wrongs of Black people in America, specifically with the Super Soldier program we'll talk about, what I also really thought was nice is the sort of side effect of the snapshot. I don't want to say blip, because the weird world dynamics of a world sort of in crisis from this return of all these people unexpectedly. It's not all amazing, because, you know, like, let's say this house next to me, everybody leaves for 5 years. After a certain point, someone's going to say, all right, well, I guess that house is now up for grabs. And so you have this reallocation of resources. And over the last year, unfortunately, in some many cases, unfortunately, we have seen that same kind of crisis and reallocation of resources, as certain people are able to get very wealthy during the pandemic, and others are basically destitute and in poverty because of the pandemic and not being able to work safely. So, like, what was really interesting is about that post Snapshot world, and like the Wanda and Vision, WandaVision explored it a little bit personally
in like one episode,
briefly. Yeah. But this series really dug its teeth into this world and like really like brought it home to the world we're in, which was really impressive.
It was one of those things where we've been getting since Spider-Man Far From Home, we've been getting glimpses like into this post-snap world and everything. And like you even get an account from Aunt May. Aunt May said she reformed in her home, and like the woman
who lived there,
somebody else lived there, and the woman who lived there thought that she was a mistress, and she's just like, what's going on? And it was just this whole idea of just how chaotic, and you got to see how chaotic that was in like a hospital setting. You literally got a snapshot from Peter's high school, where like half the band disappeared, and then students in the bleachers disappeared, and then they reappeared in the middle of a basketball game. Like,
well, just to that point, it's kind of been a progressively darker look at the post-snap reality.
Yeah.
Far From Home it was very much played for comic effect in that gym scene where it's like, all of a sudden everybody's reappearing in the middle of a basketball game. Like, oh, this is crazy. Uh-huh. Even Aunt May's, you know, like it's all kind of played very light. Monica reforming in the hospital. Like I said, when watching that scene, that was everything I wanted to see because it was chaos, Magic Wanda. But it was everything like that you expected it to be. Pure pandemonium, people reforming, and just like, what's going on? What, like, all the craziness of it. And then Falcon and Winter Soldier took it that next step of like really showing the long-term implications. So as we've seen in these properties, basically one after the other, because you had Far From Home being the end of Phase 3, WandaVision mm-hmm. now being the first thing that's come out for Phase 4, even though it technically wasn't supposed to be. But what we've gotten, it was the first thing. And then yep. Falcon and the Winter Soldier being the next. So these three properties in a row have gone from a lighthearted, like, oh, that'd be pretty funny that everybody just kind of appeared in the middle of a basketball game to, holy shit, this really has an extreme impact on people's psyche, people's just their ability to take care of themselves, you know. And we'll talk about, like, with Sam, he had no income for 5 years. It's because he didn't exist, you know, like there are these things that it really took and narrowed that focus down from a wide, funny, haha, this is kind of just a wacky thing, to the intense implications for individuals and the globe overall.
And I mentioned it in WandaVision, where we got to see it kind of on a smaller scale, just with like the town that Wanda had taken over. But now, especially when you kind of get into, if you pay really close attention to what Baron Zemo says, kind of how the government treats things, you've got this powder keg of emotion. You got Sam called Thanos a god. He views that Thanos as a god, not just like a super strong alien with like a dangerous artifact. He views him as a god. So I've mentioned this a couple of times. Like, I even did a TikTok, a video about it. Like, you've got this sort of post-traumatic syndrome kind of festering everywhere with everybody. And everybody's not just looking for like the next hero to kind of galvanize everybody. They're looking for the next thing to blame. So what's about to happen when superpowered people start popping up everywhere? Like, they're really like, it is the perfect powder keg for like this whole mutant issue that's about to pop up. And I'm really interested to see like who they get to kind of write for that and everything, because it's being set up, but it's not being set up in the way people were hoping it was being set up, in a way kind of like Nick Fury popping up at the end of Iron Man. But it's being set up in a way where it's a much more political and civil rights issue that they're really laying the groundwork for. And I don't know if they're doing that on purpose or if that's just something that can be taken advantage of later on down the line. And I'm super excited to kind of see where everything goes post Captain America and the Winter Soldier.
Well, you know that Feige and team do not do things willy-nilly, and they don't do it without a plan. So with them knowing that this deal was in the works and pretty much knowing that this was going to happen, especially with these newer properties, these Phase 4 properties, that groundwork that you're seeing definitely is intentional. And that's been at the core of the X-Men from the inception, has been very much a civil rights allegory. So to see that kind of stuff being set up is fantastic, because I want to see the X-Men done right. I don't need to just see like Wolverine, you know, pop up and just slashing things. Like, I want to see these characters really paid attention to, because that's, yes, was I there in 2000 when X-Men came out and, you know, watching in the theaters? Yes. Did I sit there even at a younger age, in my young 20s, my late teens going into my 20s, sitting there saying, hey, I don't really like how they're doing these characters, but am I an X-Men fan? Am I going to watch this? Yes. So I'm excited to see them actually really do these characters justice.
Yeah. And the biggest thing is the fact that you have Wanda, who she knows she can't really make amends with those people. She's not even really, she's like, I literally made these people live a nightmare. She just looked at Monica and said, I'm sorry, and just kind of flew off. But
did she even say I'm sorry?
She did to Monica. Right. There was a little diatribe where she's just like, and Monica understood because Monica's just like, you've got really weird shit going on and trauma. So yeah, I get that.
You'll never know what you sacrificed for them, Wanda.
Exactly. But here you have Sam, who's human. He's human. He's got barely any armor on other than his wings. I mean, he's got that new Wakanda shit. He's on that Wakanda shit. So like, but at the same time, he's not T'Challa. He's not Steve. He's one of the very few human members of the Avengers. And everybody, like, you know, everybody's cheering him on. Everybody's like, that's Captain America, like, awesome. And the two people who have the super soldier serum are backing him up. So, and that's my thing, is he is a human hero and he's being revered for all this stuff and he's fighting for people. And he filmed there was a whole speech he did on television. Now it's going to be very, very, very interesting how's the Avengers and how is the new Captain America going to take a stand for people with abilities? So, and that's kind of where we kind of get that underlying thing with Zemo in the show. But we can debate all day, but.
And we will note that now that Falcon, Anthony Mackie, is Captain America, they have announced there will be a fourth Captain America film, and it will be co-written by Malcolm Spellman. So he is continuing on his writing for Sam as Captain America in the next movie. So that's fantastic. All right. So I don't think we need to break down every episode one by one. We don't need to be here all day to talk about every episode. It's only a 6-episode series, which was nice. It was a little more compact than WandaVision, although WandaVision left me wanting more and more every week. But we do see Bucky, we do see Sam, we get the return of Sharon Carter, we get the return of Baron Zemo, and we get the introduction of Carly Morgenthau. It's Morgenthau, Morgenthau. I think they say it both ways in the show.
I think it's Morgenthau.
Okay. Because I know I said Morgenthau when we did that, when we talked about this the last time, but I think somebody said Morgenthau in the show, and I was like, oh, did I say it wrong? And then somebody else says Morgenthau, and I was like, oh, maybe not. I like to be good with the names, you know, it's how I do. But it introduces the concept of basically the UN, what is it, the GNC, I think is the name that they give it in the show.
As GRC, Global Reclamation
Council.
Council, yeah.
So basically it's a United Nations of sorts. That is basically trying to decide on how to kind of redistribute the world in certain respects, new borders, and goes into a lot with refugees and having to resettle people, and plays into a lot of real world current topics like immigration and refugees and resettlement and reparations and all of that. So
Global Repatriation Council. Really close. But what is cool, and if you don't know, if you just, you know, topics of the world doesn't really interest you, this is actually not far-fetched. There are entities, and the United Nations is definitely part of this, that in Israel, after World War II, and the fall of the Ottoman Empire, they took old-timey biblical Israel and took it away from the people who lived there to give it to the Jews to have their homeland back. So you know, when you're watching this and you're like, oh, that's kind of sci-fi, that would never happen. It absolutely happened. And it's not just then.
That's the current Israeli-Palestine conflict because
exactly
the Palestinians had land taken away from them. That was quote unquote the Israelis and has been a long standing feud for many, many years.
So like, you know, again, you know, seeing a multinational entity come up and decide, oh, this land, whether it's right or wrong, I'm not weighing in on the debate of that, but like that this is far-fetched ideas is not, it's actually rooted in history and is happening like all the time in smaller scales, you know, mm-hmm. as China pushes out and sort of, you know, demonizes the Uyghur ethnic group in China. They're taking their land and reappropriating it to Han Chinese. Like, so, I mean, this is like not far-fetched is kind of the point I'm making. So, you know,
just it's going around saying this land is your land. This land is my land.
Thank you.
I was singing it in my head, Eric. So thank you for saying it.
Who knew we had a musical number based on this horrible socio-political mess? Yeah. Anyway, but it's really interesting to see this. And what I love is that they have taken this real historical and real thing and spun it into this thing that works well in this fictional universe and allows a character like Flag Smasher, which we should talk about the roots of Flag Smasher.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Some ridiculousness in the comics we need to mention. But to give the Flag Smasher character, this villain that has popped up time and time again in Marvel Comics all the way back to like Captain America. So it's an old Captain America villain, but give it like new life and new purpose and not make it a mustachey twisting villain, but actually like what Marvel does really well, a person who they don't think they're a villain. They think they're a freedom fighter. They think they're trying to save their people. They're doing the thing to them that is the most good they can do. It gives them that meaning. So, I mean, it's at the very least, even if the other things about the show weren't maybe everyone's cup of tea, it's impressive. It's always impressive to see how Marvel does this with these villains. So I was blown away. But can we talk about Flag Smasher for a second before I move on?
Oh, 100%.
I want you to know, because I don't know if any of you have read the wiki, and I will tell you,
I
have not read these issues. I'm not a Captain America like fan in that sense. I bought issues, but I never really was that into it up until like maybe the Brubaker era where you got Bucky Cap and then the Sam Wilson era, which I sold my comic collection about a year ago. Oh, I really wish I hadn't. Comics have gone up so much because of the pandemic and then that I had the first appearance. Anyway, whatever. It doesn't matter. I try not to worry about that and lose sleep. But Carl Morgenthau, whatever, son of a wealthy Swiss banker turned diplomat in Bern at Switzerland, who cares, did this whole thing where he used terrorism to spread anti-nationalist sentiment, conducting a one-man terror campaign in New York City against nationalist symbols, holding hundreds as hostage until Captain America captured him. Sound familiar? Establishing a society called Ultimatum. Now, Ultimatum is an acronym, and you're going to love this acronym, right? Ultimatum stands for the Underground Liberated, Totally Integrated Mobile Army to Unite Mankind. Having had to write acronyms for my job many times, I'm going to tell you right now that this is one of the most horrible and impressive acronyms I've ever seen, and it's a comic book trope. This happened a lot in the 60s, and Kirby's done it, and Stan Lee did, I mean, all of the 60s, 70s, they did this like all the time. But I mean, love that.
Shield,
it's so dumb.
Like, it's they threw words together to make the acronym
totally integrated.
It sounds so Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and I fucking love it.
He did
totally integrated, dude.
He did at some points reluctantly team with Captain America, and in the comics, this was Steve Captain America, not, you know, Sam or Bucky or anybody else. However, John Walker did get involved in this whole thing, I believe as U.S. agent, though it doesn't say here. And so there was lots of stuff going on with these characters that actually happened in the comics. In addition, the Sam Wilson taking on the role happened, and there was a lot of blowback and pushback and all this other stuff. Different the way that it was played out in the series, but rooted in moments from the show. What I think they did the most work with and sort of transform from the comics was the Bucky story, because Bucky has had a completely different trajectory, not completely different, but has definitely done a different path and done different things than they invented for the show. And I think to the better, because I feel like they really gave his character a nice arc to sort of work through all the shit that he had done as the Winter Soldier. The problem being now, though, what the hell is he? You know, could he have gotten his own new outfit and costume and identity? I mean, what? Maybe, yes, that would have been cool.
He's the White Wolf. And they actually referred to him as the White Wolf in this.
Should have leaned in on that more, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and that's the only thing that I love that the Sam story had a lot of elements pulled from the comics. The only thing that I'm slightly, and I understand why they did it, but they kind of did it in reverse. The show starts with basically the speech, the mentality that was what ended his run as Captain America, when he had basically a crisis of conscience of whose shield is this? Is this, you know, I'm trying to live up to being somebody else, and then deciding that he doesn't want to live in someone's shadow and wants to be who he is, be the best version of himself. And that's when he went back to being Falcon. So it was weird knowing, being a comic reader and knowing that story and really appreciating that moment in comic writing as how it marked the end of his run as Captain America. So to see it be his decision to not be Captain America and then eventually get to the end of the 6-episode arc and him take on the mantle, like, it was a little odd, a little, I don't want to say jarring, but knowing that that's where it ended, it was weird to see it be kind of like the jumping off point for it all. But otherwise, I did appreciate the fact that they pulled so many elements of his run as Captain America from the comics into this and wove it in such a way that it worked really well. And we all knew he was going to be Cap, but it was still rewarding when he finally decided to take up the shield and be Captain America. And then to see him in a comic accurate costume was fantastic.
So
absolutely fantastic.
So there's actually a neat little detail. So there's tons of little, like, neat little details all through the show and everything. But his costume, the star, like the center of his costume, is similar to Cap's, but Cap's had 3 lines on it, and Sam's has 2. And apparently there's something in the military where if you're missing a member of your squad, there's either like there's one less star or there's one less stripe. I'm not sure which one of the patches, but there's one less stripe on his suit to signify that Cap's not there. And they also did this with the whole thing where he's running and constantly leaves a spot on his left for Cap to pass him, but he's just not there. But then during his montage, they just kind of showed this blank spot. He's constantly shifting to his right to leave room for him. And I thought that was kind of neat. And then, Brian, you'd mentioned Bucky. What's funny is Bucky's a combination of 2 different characters. The MCU Bucky, there's Steve's best friend he had growing up, who he goes back and sees once he's thawed out, and he's an old man, and he was Jewish, and it turns out he was gay. But then you have Winter Soldier, which I think his name was actually Bucky. I can't remember Steve's like sidekick / friend when he was a soldier, but the Bucky's actually an amalgam of 2. Bucky in the MCU is actually an amalgam of 2 characters. And there's been a little bit of chatter about whether or not that's kind of, if that's like queer erasure, or if they plan on kind of coding Bucky as like a queer character. Because he's very not much of a, the clips we see of Bucky when he's younger, he's like, you know, 2 girls on every arm, very embellished about, like, you know, making sure Steve is there when they go on group dates and everything. But then now that he's, you know, post-traumatic Bucky and everything, he's not like kind of like Steve. He's very not kind of there for personal relationships. But Steve was always hung up on Peggy, whereas Bucky's just more trying to just kind of reclaim himself. So it'll be very interesting to see how they kind of play out that character. But no, I really, really like all the detail, the little bits and pieces of the suit, especially Sam's Captain America suit that they put in there.
And I think there was I think it was in the first episode, because I think I saw an article after we talked about it the first time, after the first episode had dropped, and in the museum, the Smithsonian or Smithsonian equivalent, whatever they, I don't remember if we decided that they called it that.
It was the Smithsonian.
At the Smithsonian exhibit, there is a shot of Sam and Steve's picture is on the wall to his left. So yeah, so it is. It was definitely a theme where, you know, the whole on your left from Captain America Winter Soldier all the way through Endgame, where Sam finally got to say it to Cap. When he was coming through, you know, the whole on your left, the portals open and goosebumps and tears start flowing for me. And then to see it kind of referenced again throughout the show was a nice nod and a nice homage to their friendship, where people are like, oh, they only knew each other for, you know, this amount of time and blah, blah, blah. But when you go through all of these things with people, that it ties you together very quickly. So to see their friendship really grow and be that bond was a delightful treat to see throughout their films and this television series.
I was trying to read up on that whole Bucky hybrid character thing, and I don't know the first part you're talking about, but James Buchanan Bucky Barnes Jr. is the original Bucky, and he is the Winter Soldier for sure. But then there was a replacement Bucky and a replacement Cap, and the replacement Bucky was named Jack Monroe.
I think that's who, yeah.
So yeah, the whole queer Earth,
I think he's, isn't that like Jack Flash? I think he becomes something else because
he becomes Nomad eventually.
Yeah.
After Cap had been Nomad.
I was going to say,
there's
Nomad.
A lot.
Nomad's been used, yeah.
There's a big history of like moving titles around in Captain America and everything.
I only say that because remember, oh God, what was the name? It wasn't Axis. What was the, where was the Hail Hydra moment from like 2015? Whatever the start of that run was. The people.
Empire?
Was the start of Secret Empire. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Secret Empire hadn't started, but it was like that run up to it in that Cap run. The person he kicked out of the plane and killed, who eventually turns out didn't actually die, I think that's the same guy. So I think he eventually came back. It was this whole thing because he was supposed to kill Eric Selvig, who was in the plane, like that whole part of it. I think that same character eventually did come back and was part of that Secret Empire run or lead up to it, at least.
Yeah. And then there was also a thing about a second Bucky named Fred Davis and it was established that he and Bucky Barnes had met and befriended each other before the end of World War II. So basically what we're saying is there's been a lot of Buckys,
yeah.
But James Bucky Barnes is the original and Winter Soldier. And so, yeah, so I want to talk about the queer storyline, queer idea, all that stuff. And listen, I am not against headcanon in any way, shape, or form. If you feel like James Bucky Barnes has, you know, speaks to you as someone who is queer, and you see that in him, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And I'm not going to say you're wrong. However, I am going to like say there's nothing in the text that is overtly, I believe, pointing to that, but Pat might disagree.
Did you know this podcast is powered by Acast? Acast is the home of podcasting. For creators looking for freedom to grow their listeners and make money too, and creative brands looking for smart ways to advertise. Podcasters and advertisers in the know Acast. It's time you did too. Visit acast.com to find out more. Acast, for the stories.
No. Definitely not. Although one of the big things was the whole tiger photos that Bucky references in the first episode and how it was a reach around to it's a gayest episode ever Sorry. If I'm not dropping race chaser allegories, it's going to be now best episode, or not best episode, gayest episode ever allegories. There a lot of men on like Tinder would put like these like cat pictures or tiger pictures, or like this was a
tiger pictures.
Yeah, this was a fad or a trend on Tinder, and I think it was essentially like, I don't know if it was straight guys or it was gay men that were doing it, but whatever it was like this stretch and this reach to equate that line to Bucky at least being in some way, shape, or form bisexual or pansexual. But so I'm looking at an article from Up Rocks. Captain America may never have a boyfriend, but he's long had a gay best friend. This is a horribly written headline of the title. but yeah, apparently there was a comic character named Arnie Roth, who is, I think, who you're referencing, BJ.
Yeah.
A neighborhood friend of a young pre-Captain America Steve Rogers, Arnie Roth normally stood up for the scrawny Steve Rogers when he was bullied by the neighborhood Brooklyn Toughs. So I think that this is the... I think that's the character who ended up being homosexual.
Oh, so what they're saying is because in that first Captain America, whatever, first Avenger, whatever it was, because Bucky sort of filled that role in that movie, that's where they're conflating this character. I mean, listen, I am all about anyone making these interesting leaps of whatever.
It's not conflating the character. It's that they took some of what that character did and then just kind of switched Bucky out with him. Gave him characteristics of the character.
Stop short, and this is just my thing. I'm not shaming or saying anyone else shouldn't. I do not then draw the conclusion that conveyed the gay into Bucky. I would love nothing more than Marvel to get with the program and have more queer representation. I mean, this is a not...
Yes. I would like to convey the gay into Sebastian Stan.
I'd only do that if he was dressed up as Luke Skywalker, because that's the other thing people want to make happen, right?
If y'all saw Sebastian Stan's Instagram post in the trench coat where he was like down like in the middle of the street and he had nothing on under the trench coat and lifted it up and you saw his bare ass.
Whoa, I haven't seen that one. Wow.
Delightful. I would like to convey the gay into Sebastian Stan's Bucky Barnes.
When I went back and watched, what did I watch? The end of Endgame. Just, it was on TNT and I was stuck in a hotel with just basic cable, whatever. I really, really think he looks so much better with short hair compared to the little mid whatever haircut he had. And it is just night and day for me. Like, that was just never even a thing I considered attractive, in that look with that hair as I have my own head of long hair now. But the short hair in this new series was a good look. I also love, this is totally off this, I love the relationship he had with the old Japanese man, because that is such emotionally dense, complicated.
Ooh, yeah.
And the fact that they didn't really give it a happy ending, like there's a lot of things these days where you really go, wow, we've moved along so far from like the happy ending with a bow on it and everyone has a great, whatever, to like the complicated realities of life where you don't get that.
Yeah.
You don't get that moment. And if you tell somebody, by the way, I murdered your son, even if you're the best of besties, guess what? You're not going to go back to that relationship. It's not going to happen. So
I just wish they would have given us more of it instead of kind of pulling away from it, because it seemed like it was going to be such a thing in that first episode. It was so played into, and it was phenomenal. And then they forgot about it for the remainder of the majority of the next five episodes until this 2-minute scene where he finally admits it
And then like the camera pans out of the apartment and then we move on. And it just felt like it felt a little bit like we were cheated out of like there being a full catharsis for it. I liked that they actually did go back to it and he did admit it, because it's his journey. It's not necessarily ours. Like, as a character, that was his journey, and we got to at least see him make that decision. But like, I feel like a little bit more might have been nice.
Well, that was kind of the catalyst that made him kind of go scream at Sam, because he had something else he could concentrate on, and voicing his disappointment in Sam and how much the shield actually meant to him. And I liked where it came full circle was when Sam told him, was just like, do you want some tough love right now? He's like, you're not looking for forgiveness. He's like, you're trying to make yourself feel better. And that was the big thing, is he, like, him helping out the old guy or taking him to lunch and stuff like that, that was for Sam. That wasn't for, and he knew exactly what he needed to do to tell the older guy, you know, because he realized he'd been suffering since his son had died. Like, he all he could do was wander and guess, and he'd been doing that for decades.
Yeah, he had no closure.
He had no closure, and even if it cost Sam that relationship, but Bucky. Sam didn't want to do it. Or Bucky didn't want to do it. Bucky was so wonderfully written in this show, because everything from him sleeping on the floor, to Sam actually trying to counsel him, to how he's gotten his pardon through the government. Like, everything with Bucky was very, very well done. Actually, everything with most of the characters was very, very well done. But yeah, no, that whole scene where Sam just tells him, do the work. He's like, that's the only way you're going to feel better. That's the only way things are going to change for you for the better, is if you do the work. And I loved that.
So I want to pivot into a character that Eric had brought up when we first talked about this, and I had brought up I'd asked you guys the question of what do you want to see in the series, and Eric had mentioned a character who at that point we hadn't officially been introduced to, I don't think it was even mentioned. It might have been a little bit of a foreshadowing Easter egg in the credits on the first one, but the character of the power broker was the one that Eric had brought up. So Eric, since you got your wish, and the Power Broker definitely was a big part of this series, how did you feel about the way that they played it out, the sneaky reveal that was telegraphed quite a bit out, but as to who the Power Broker actually was? But what were your thoughts on Power Broker and that storyline?
Well, spoiler alert, Power Broker is Sharon Carter. I don't mind Sharon Carter being the power broker. I did not like the way they wrote her arc in this show. And then I like Sharon Carter. I like the actress who played Sharon Carter. I don't think the last three episodes I knew she was the power broker before they revealed she was the power broker. There was no mystery there. It was so obvious. And I don't know if they're setting her up to possibly be a Skrull and it's Secret Invasion. I don't know if she is more going to be the catalyst for Armor Wars, because she's going to be selling the armor secrets to everybody. Yeah. But she's going to be the catalyst for one of those two shows. But I still feel it was so heavy-handed the way that they put it in our face that she's the power broker.
It was dumb. I hated it. I hated it so much. I hated it. And the only thing that will redeem it for me is if she is a Skrull. And here's why. You're taking the daughter of Sharon Carter. Right? No, Peggy Carter.
Grandniece.
Grandniece. Yeah, that's right. I always think they're not. You're right. But they're close enough. Whatever. aunts and nephews are very similar, or an uncle's nephew, whatever, it happens. Anyway, and you're turning into this megalomaniacal, but certainly more mustache twirling or whatever than I think, like Zemo. Like when Baron Zemo is a more sympathetic villain than Sharon Carter, who is like such a huge part as a strong woman Marvel character without superpowers, who is a huge, huge part of Steve Rogers' life and the Avengers and all of these things. And you take that strong, amazing protagonist and you make her the dumbest, like, oh, I'm mad because they kicked me out of America and I'm going to make money. Like, it was so dumb. I was really just...
See, I don't think it's that at all. Like, she, like, it's not a matter of the fact that she's mad because they kicked her out of America. She was fucking abandoned by everyone. Sam was kicked out of America, essentially. Steve was kicked out of America, but they still had each other. They still had a team. They still had a mission. She was literally dumped in, like, the worst fucking place. I love the use of Madripoor, but she was dumped in the worst fucking place ever. And she, honestly, the main issue is that Eric's right, is she didn't have a character arc. So she was the only one that didn't have a character arc. So it was super obvious.
Her look petty. And I don't accept that Sharon Carter is that petty.
See, but you're falling into the... Yeah, that's the thing. It's been 5 years, and you're falling into the trap that Baron Zemo set right there. When you worship people, like you're worshiping Peggy Carter, you overlook their flaws. And the thing is, she's not a super soldier. Her family has served the American government forever. So what's she supposed to do? She's either A, she's got to be like Sam and Captain America were, or B, she got to eat.
She's got to look out for herself. I'm okay with her being complicated, and I'm okay with her being bitter. So I think the character that we meet early on that is Sharon, I buy that. That's fine. Yeah. I'm fine with that. It's that she has become the power broker and now she kills this person in cold blood because she is the power broker. That's where I go, nope, don't buy it. You're shitting on a great character who's a strong woman in the Marvel universe. Don't like it. No.
But
she's a Skrull. I'm fine.
But did she do that? But that's the thing, is did she, because she did help Sam. Like, here's the thing. Everything she did helped herself.
Yeah.
But everything she did also helped Sam.
Right. Until the end. The post credits. So again, like, I like the first bit. The killing Carly, don't like it, but okay. Like you said, it helps everybody, fine. The very last scene, which was a stupid, like, if you're gonna do a post credit scene, don't fucking waste our time. That's a dumb, dumb, oh, stupid listen, beat.
You can't say that when they had to sit through an entire set of fucking credits, 10 minutes or whatever long, for Captain America, Steve Rogers, to roll up, sit in a chair, and basically tell us, so you waited for this, huh? Or for a fucking giant ant to be playing the drums. At the end of Ant-Man. Like, they have put some ridiculous fucking post-credit scenes out there.
Marvel trolling is hilarious when they do that. This was not a troll, though. This was a genuine character beat to a character that they shat on and then didn't even bother to include this part in the main story and decided it'd be better in a post-credits thing. I'm like,
if it leads to Armor Wars or Secret Invasion, it's a huge post-credit scene because it will then set up a future property, which it most likely is.
If it wasn't Sharon Carter, I'd be a little less pissed off. But I love Sharon Carter. I don't worship Sharon Carter, but I think she's an amazing, strong female protagonist in a lot of sausages in that Marvel MCU. And you've turned her into this villain. And some people probably are like, no, that's awesome. We don't want just strong women protagonists. We want strong women villains. We want complicated characters. Fine. Just don't do it to Sharon Carter.
This series also gave us a strong female villain in Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Coming in and chewing the scenery.
Contessa? here's the thing.
Madam fucking Hydra. Madam fucking Hydra. No.
How much do you know about the Contessa? Because she is not just a villain.
She's been everything.
She's been everything to everybody. Right.
So I am all about the Contessa being there. I want to see her and Nick Fury go toe-to-toe, even if it's Sam Jackson's Nick Fury. It's a little different, but whatever. It's fine. I really am excited that she did that character. I love the whole secrecy thing. Did you know, I just read this today, she was supposed to premiere not in this property, but in a different property that got delayed.
In Black Widow.
Black Widow. Yeah.
So that was cool. And I mean, like, you know, it still works.
Because her character has ties to the Red Room as well. She's a triple agent in the comics.
Totally. So, yep.
So it's interesting, but like I'm very, because here's the thing is Sam is playing a very dangerous game, and he doesn't know he's playing a very dangerous game, because the moment if the wrong person finds out Isaiah Bradley is alive, Sharon's making that phone call. His ass is grass. He's done. Like, the only reason he is still alive right now is because he's been disavowed and everybody thinks he's dead. But if he was still alive, you can bet either Sharon or everybody under the sun is going to go to harvest him for his abilities and his blood to get that new super soldier serum off the ground. So I think that would be interesting, because especially with his grandson being there. So we've got Patriot. So we've almost got all the entire Young Avengers team popping up everywhere, because I know Stature is supposed to make her appearance in Quantumania. So it'll be very interesting. It'll be interesting if she's a Skrull, that's cool. If she's not, and she's somehow kind of just playing the background in the fourth Captain America movie, that'll be cool too. I'm super interested. There's been a lot of chatter about the Contessa possibly putting together the Thunderbolts, because you've got Zemo in the Raft now, which is where he is in the comics when he does missions with the Thunderbolts. So, and obviously the Contessa has some link to General Ross. So it's super interesting, all the parts they have moving at the end.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus as the Contessa gave me Constance Zimmer in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I don't know if you guys remember when she was in there.
Yes.
Coulson's like pseudo girlfriend before she was killed, and she was kind of like opposing force, and just she had her own, like, you know, group that, and it just, Constance Zimmer is a phenomenal actor, and the way that she portrayed a likable villain with some good tendencies was like the primer for Julia Louis-Dreyfus in this role as the Contessa. And as soon as she was on screen, I ate it the fuck up. It was like Selena Myers on crack. And if you watch Veep, fucking everything. Everything. It was amazing. By the way, our current government kind of gives me the feels that Veep has already started in the real world. with hopefully a more competent staff running things. But, you know, old white man as the president and a woman of, as the vice president and all this. So it's very interesting to see how television is starting to shape up in real life.
Right.
But so great side characters. Brian, not happy with Sharon Carter's development. I enjoyed her becoming Petty Mayonnaise at the end. That was my favorite part, where she just chucked her phone. She's like, boom, we out. But I could appreciate the fact that it wasn't just that she was kicked out of America. It was that she was basically labeled a traitor and everybody else was pardoned. And she was just basically tossed aside and still considered to be nothing, even though her family has given so much for S.H.I.E.L.D. and you know, to protect the country.
And I don't see her as a villain either, though. I don't. I mean, she's doing
we'll see
she's a Marvel villain. Yeah. She's a Marvel villain. It's complicated. She has real reasons, like we've talked about, for doing what she's doing.
She crossed the line. She's a recent MCU villain. She's not phase one, early phase two, where it was just the person with the same powers that just is evil for some reason. We're getting these nuances. That's fair. Yeah, we're getting these more nuanced takes on villains, which is phenomenal. And we're not killing our villains right away, which lets them come back for more properties. Well,
hold on, because here's another sin, ding, that this show committed. to kill one of the best dumb villains. I think he's dumb, but whatever, it's fun. Batroc the Leaper. Because
I didn't realize that was him. And then she said Batroc, and I was like, Batroc? Wait, what?
Yes. Batroc is ridiculous in the best Marvel way. And they actually figured out a way to make it work in the movie and in the TV show recently, right?
Yeah.
And then they kill him. And I'm like, no, Batroc's amazing. He shows up and it's like, holy shit, it's Batroc. We're going to get some ridiculous parkour, flying squirrel, whatever that is. And you kill him. So no, they didn't learn their lesson enough. They killed
We got the whole opening scene where he's helicopter hopping.
Amazing. Amazing. The best, the highlight of the series, I think, is the opening. I mean, I like the series overall. I am not shitting on this just to shit on this. I really did like the series. I just had issues. And I think because I enjoyed so much of it, any of these little things that I am passionate about, it's because they bothered me against the rest of it being so good. So yeah, Batroc, if you have never read any of the comics and found Batroc, you really should go back and enjoy the Leaper. The Leaper.
Every time you see Batroc, I hear Bartok, who is the bat from Anastasia.
Yes.
And then I give her a yeah, and then a yeah, and then I kick her.
Yeah. Yeah, I really, really, really think Batroc is underrated, and again, it's just a thing. So what other did you guys have any other problems now that we're digging into the things that we didn't like? I know the ending for some it wasn't as dynamic or as exciting.
The pacing of the last episode was off for me. It seemed like there was too much happening all over the place. And it wasn't super focused on, I think, what they wanted to do. I think the Flag Smasher storyline, I think it was important to tell, but it got really muddled in there, I think.
Well, I mean, pieces of them were tossed everywhere, so, I mean, Zemo got his Christmas wish from his butler, so.
Oh my God. That's who that was. I totally didn't realize it at first. I totally didn't think about it.
The butler did it.
The only reason Zemo was involved in this whole fucking thing, the only reason was so he could kill super soldiers. Everything about this was so he could kill off people with superpowers. That is 100%
what
he was there for do.
Which is great. I absolutely love. Zemo to me, they didn't get enough of him. That's another. That's my other complaint. He didn't get enough Zemo. But if you want more Zemo, especially you want Zemo dancing, there's a YouTube video you can go watch. we can put up on the Facebook page. But like Zemo,
do you mean
that actor was?
Are you talking about X the Eliminator from Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law? Because that's all I see anytime that hood comes out.
Birdman.
The Zemo hood is ridiculous, and it's such a dumb Marvel Comics thing.
But I love that they did it. I love that they did it.
Oh, yeah.
You remember Fat Albert? I mean, this is a little problematic, probably.
Yeah, the guy with the...
Mushmouth? Mushmouth.
But let me tell you, like, I love the complicated role that Zemo had in the story. And you know, I think we said earlier, maybe off before we started recording, like, we didn't know why he was there. Like, his story didn't feel finished. It's not finished because Zemo is huge in the comics as well. And if they're smart, especially after how well received compared to Ultron, was Age of Ultron or whatever that one.
Yeah.
And that was waste. He was wasted in that. Totally wasted. But this is Zemo. This is the Zemo I want.
Oh yeah.
He's got a very clear purpose that they've defined, which is different from the comics, but that's fine. But he's got a really just laser focus, and he's got a reason, like a really good reason. They destroyed his homeland. Super soldiers and super powered people destroyed his homeland. And seeing that purity of focus and mission and understanding the motivation, like again, Marvel just nailed it. And I love that. And I want more.
And I, if they are setting up some sort of Thunderbolts something movie or a series, because they marked that in this series, they marketed him as the MCU's Hannibal Lecter. And I love it.
Yes.
Like,
I agree with
he's,
that.
He's always got a plan. He's always got an idea. And I love.
And he's charming. He's very charming.
And I love the whole idea where his end game twice now has been to have a hero kill him. Or to kill himself. That is has been his end game. And the thing is, it's T'Challa stopped him, which is great because now because Bucky made him think he was going to kill him, and he was ready. And then Bucky was like, "Yeah, just kidding." And the Dora Milaje shows up, and I love that sort of parallel between Bucky and T'Challa, and I love that whole idea that Zemo's going to make them regret it. This is twice now, he's pretty much been ready to die for his cause, for the things he's done. And they are like, no, I'm not that kind of person. No, you need to go through the due process. And I feel like that's why we're not done, is because the heroes, is it a mistake? Is it a mistake to keep him around? Because I really like the idea that he doesn't know that Sharon's the power broker. Two, I feel like they're going to butt heads at some point. There's going to be a point where she's making people with powers. He's trying to cut that off at the head. And then Sam and Bucky are going to get caught in the middle of that showdown. And I really can't wait to kind of see that kind of happen, because it's a powder keg right now. And it's Zemo. Zemo is just, he chewed every scene he was in. Him giving out candy to everybody, like, I honestly can't wait. I can't wait. And you're right. More Zemo. Zemo was needed.
Speaking of Zemo, and you mentioned the Dora Milaje, we have to talk about that scene, because I felt like Zemo during that fight was the gif of Michael Jackson eating popcorn.
Yes.
And then try to run away. And then ran away. Like, it was phenomenal. So when the Dora Milaje find out that that Bucky has broken Zemo out, they come to reclaim him and take him back to prison. And the best fight scene, in my opinion, of this entire 6-episode arc happens between members of the Dora Milaje and Bucky and Sam and Johnny Walker. I won't call him John because I just enjoy calling him Johnny Walker.
Oh, you mean at that moment he knew he fucked up, or rather at that moment Sam and Bucky knew he fucked up.
Oh, just that one moment in time when he touched her arm and is like, "Oh, you done fucked up now," and they had to show him who the fuck is boss and took him down, and then
took Bucky's arm
and then whoop, 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 whoop. And dislodged Bucky's arm, and it just fell the fuck right off and right onto the ground. That was beautifully done, and showed that even though you have extremely well-versed and well-trained fighters and a super soldier, that the Dora Milaje, where they stand is where they have jurisdiction, and they showed why that is true. And that was fucking brilliant. So I think we've covered most of our topics. Do we want to dive into John Walker, U.S. agent, now that the Contessa has branded him as such?
You mean the walking epitome of white privilege? He is. Like, it's,
yeah, no, he is.
He is the walking epitome. Like, that is, he is the walking epitome of white privilege. He straight up murdered somebody, and the government's just like, "We're taking away your shit, but you're good. Go on ahead. Go. We're get out of here, you crazy kid.
We're gonna take away your toys. You have a timeout for 5 minutes. But now, you're U.S.
But you
agent.
Did a good. You did a good. So you can have a secret title now."
Well, it's consistent with the military code of conduct and the fact that he was in the military and, you know, in the heat of battle, blah, 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 all that stuff. So I wasn't like, oh my God, that's all you're getting. This is it. But yeah, his reaction was such bullshit. And again, like, I love that actor. What's his name? Shoot, I was trying to look it up.
Wyatt Russell.
Yeah. Kurt Russell,
Goldie Hawn's son.
Oh shit! Is it really?
Yeah.
Like, that totally makes sense now. it's those you know, mutant genes that he inherited. So if you have not seen The Lodge, I think that's the title of the show. It's AMC. It was kind of didn't do great that two seasons. He's great in that as this like sort of burnout kind of crazy character. But there's also a Black Mirror episode that he is the main character in, Playtest, I think, and he has to test this like VR experience in a house. He's a great actor. He's really funny and he's got a lot of range, and so I love that he's there. Didn't recognize him at first with just the helmet,
and he looks different in every picture.
But he got better and he got a lot hotter as he grew the beard and, you know, filled in all that.
100%.
But you're right, totally white privilege. They at first I was kind of like, I don't love this, and then yeah, that whole thing. But then evolving into U.S. Agent, who is a protagonist more often than not, and finding this like identity that is, you know, their own or his own and all that, like I was happy the way they landed that. They didn't like dig too deep on it because they didn't really like forgive him, but they accepted him, and he made the heroic choices in the end to sort of earn the redemption. So I'm fine with all of that, but it was complicated for me to go on that journey at first.
Well, and that's the thing, is it's also a commentary on how the military. There's a couple of TikTok artists, people that I listen to and watch. One is Straw Hat Goofy. He has some really, really, really good commentary on the show. But there's another one, a woman, and I will definitely post one of her skits up on our Facebook, where she was in the military, and she said that John Walker's, it's not just a commentary on white privilege, he's also a commentary on how the military establishment treats its veterans. This man obviously had PTSD. And the thing is, the divergence with him and Steve is that Steve was at least lucky enough in his second life to meet Sam, who is a counselor for veterans. And you even see points in there where Sam is not only using that for Kylie, he's doing it to everybody. He is a licensed therapist, and he's like, hey guys, maybe we just give Kylie some space. I'll go talk to her. You don't do something stupid, and we all like. But the thing is Walker is the perfect example as to why the original creator of the Super Soldier Serum did not want a soldier. He didn't want a good soldier to have the serum. He wanted a good man to have the serum. And so it's funny because you can look at John Walker as kind of somewhat a sympathetic character because he's running on full throttle. And he's just being told by his superiors, like, this is what you do. This is your job. You get the bad guy. And that's it. He doesn't have any of that rebellion that Steve had. He doesn't. And so he's, I really hope they do kind of dive deeper into him a little bit more, especially with whatever properties they have coming down the pipeline. It'll be very interesting to see him, especially if he pops up in Secret Invasion or Armor Wars. It'll be very interesting to see where he goes from here. But I definitely agree with you. I like how they stuck the landing with his character.
For sure. So I think now we have touched on everything on the six episodes that have premiered on Disney Plus.
I got one more.
Yeah, listen. All right. This is what this roundtable discussion is all about.
Sorry, I mentioned it earlier in my comment, and we haven't really come back to it. Carl Lumley is an actor who you may have seen. Oh God, what was that series like? Mantis? Like, there was this cheesy sci-fi show way back, and he was also in, I believe, in Alias, and he was in Battlestar Galactica very briefly. He shows up here and there, but he played the Black Super Soldier character, whose name I again also just forgot.
Isaiah Bradley.
Thank you. Oh my God. Thank you. Isaiah Bradley. And this is something that is so deft. And when they did this in the comics, I don't want to say who did it. It might've been Brubaker, but it probably was before that. But when they layered in this idea, paralleling the Tuskegee, you know, incidents, not the right word, but you know what I mean? The Tuskegee testing
experiments,
Yes. On black, I think it was mostly black men, but black people, on giving them like syphilis and stuff to see how they did. It's horrible stuff. Right. But that real thing, to layer that reality in here by saying, oh yeah, they totally took, you know, a bunch of black soldiers and did the super soldier serum on them to sort of test it, to test the recreating the serum, right? To put that in there and then to give Isaiah's character this intense anger that is so earned, so valid, and so justified. But then to show the arc of him seeing that, yeah, even though the system and the country and everyone has treated him as badly, treated black people as badly as they can, that there is this shiny little glimmer of hope in Sam taking up the shield and becoming Captain America, you know, sort of paralleling the, you know, Obama becoming president and other major milestones that we've thankfully been able to achieve for black people and, you know, to some tiny amount of reparation without it being actually in a reparation. But like that was so magical and so touching. And I was really, really, really moved by that whole storyline and then to have the statue at the end. So I don't know, BJ, tell me what you felt like when you were watching that, having that experience. Like, you know, what did that mean for you?
First I was like, oh, they did the thing. I was like, and they didn't sugarcoat that shit at all, which they shouldn't have. Like, it was one of those things where it's very rarely I see a character have a reaction and I'm like, yeah, Sam's react. It was Sam. And the whole lot, especially the talk Sam had with his sister, where he's just like, I can let that embitter me or I can let it change me for the better. And I really liked that. I liked that whole, because that's where he made the decision, where he's just like, I am going to become Captain America and that's the end. He's not asking for permission. And I love the fact that he got honestly, the monument almost made me cry, like straight up when he got the monument made without showing the world that he's still alive, which is smart. And the speech he made, the talk he had with Isaiah after everything was said and done. If you look in the background where he's talking about his decision and why he did what he did and everything, you can see Isaiah's grandson walking out onto the porch and listening to Sam talk, which is like, you know, that's going to be a flashback scene when we finally get our Young Avengers movie or Patriot finally shows up.
Yes. Oh my God. So, I completely forgot about that.
The moment the boy opened the door and said, he doesn't want to see y'all. I was like, there he is.
No, that's so awesome. I can't believe I missed that because I love Young Avengers so much, but I forgot that Patriot was Isaiah's grand. That is another beautiful touch from the comics.
And so it felt very cathartic. Of course, I was pulled right out of that by literally all the racist people coming out of the woodwork being like, no, Sharon Carter should have been Captain America. Literally. Somebody who's pulling some shady shit, and they're like, black guy, somebody who's running drugs.
I'm not going to say I wouldn't love a female Captain America, honestly. True. I think that's a great idea, but obviously not the point of what we're doing here.
Just well, so what a character. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
Carter gets to be Captain America.
Yeah, and all the actors are reprising their roles in What If. But no, it meant a lot to me. It was very great. There's no way you can really avoid that conversation without outing yourself now. The series was literally one of the major focuses of the series is what's it like to be a black person in America? Like straight up, it was spelled out multiple times in the show, and it's one of those things where fans are going to be a lot less apologetic about that shit now. I'm already seeing it. I'm seeing it in people's interactions online and everything. Like, it's one of those things where it gave me Black Panther vibes. It gave me very strong Black Panther vibes without feeling like I'm being preached down or talked down to. It was very much about the characters and it felt so organic, and it was, I love the character of Isaiah Bradley, and I like the way they presented him. And I really, really want to kind of see him possibly be a point of counsel for Sam in a Captain America 4 or another series or something. I really want him to take War Machine over there for the barbecue. Bucky bringing the cake to the barbecue. That was great. but yeah, no, Isaiah, if they didn't have Isaiah in the show, it would have definitely been missing something. Everything involving Isaiah needed to happen. All the talks, all the subject matter, it all needed to happen. And it was the perfect time for it.
Absolutely. I mean, even from just the introduction of Isaiah into them leaving the first time and being on the streets of Baltimore, and Sam and Bucky getting into an argument and the cops rolling up and, you know, just hassling Sam, regardless of the fact that he is a globally known superhero as the Falcon. Like, it just, yeah, no, I'm glad that they did not shy away from those. And it was great to see an authentically Black piece of art that was socially conscious in the same vein as, or even more socially pointed than Luke Cage, because Luke Cage was authentically Black. Like, just, we are not going to hold back on the Blackness of this piece of art. And it was great to see it there. And it's even greater to see a piece like that with such social commentary, especially after what we've lived through, in the forefront of everybody's mind for the last year and a half, you know, or a little over a year. We're going into pretty much a year since George Floyd's death and all of that. And now seeing one person actually being held accountable for it, and hopefully it'll be repeated 3 more times. So it was great to see all that and to see art call out these aspects of real life in such a direct way. So some great characters in Isaiah Bradley and his grandson. So, like you said, with stature coming, with you know, with him being Patriot in the comics, with Kate Bishop in the Hawkeye series coming soon. You've got Kamala Khan rolling up in not only her solo show, but now in the retitled Captain Marvel 2, The Marvels. You know, basically seeing all of the Young Avengers starting to take shape in the MCU, Billy and Tommy in their younger forms before they, you know, get brought back in as Speed and Wiccan. You know, so it's great to see how so much is being shaped and how these new actors are being brought in, and we're really just getting to kind of grow this universe. And to see a universe like this really take shape and to take hold for years to come, you know, at this point, it doesn't look like we're going to be without Marvel properties for the foreseeable future. Like, we have stuff coming down the pike for a long time, and I'm excited for it. So overall, we don't normally do flame ratings for shows, but I think this would be a fun one. We've had a great conversation about the show overall. So if you had to give it a flame rating, Brian, what would you give it?
I would say 4 out of 5.
Okay. BJ?
I'm going to go 5 out of 5.
All right.
Burn it down.
And Eric, what about you?
I'll give it 4 out of 5 Red Wings.
We didn't even talk about Red Wing that much, but love Red Wing.
Is that how many Red Wings they actually went through in the series?
Oh!
First one, when I was like, and even though the stupid thing is a drone, it's a UAV, it's like, who cares? It's not like alive, it's whatever. Yeah. But I was still like, oh no!
And it didn't talk. You thought, you'd think that they could have put a voice on it, like Jarvis or Peter's.
I'm glad they didn't do that.
Yeah.
I really am glad they kept it that way, but because Red Wing doesn't talk in the comics either, right? It's a an animal.
It's an actual bird.
But I mean, like, the Sam has like a relationship that's like unspoken with Red Wing, or spoken from him, because you got to speak that. But
he's got like some sort of avian telepathy.
Yeah. That's a phrase I haven't heard ever, I think. But I love
avian
it.
Avian telepathy.
I like that. But yeah, I like that they kept that relationship. But yes, I thank you for reminding us of the joy that is Red Wing.
I was hoping that they would have made Red Wing, like, given him a color schematic that went with Sam's new Captain America outfit.
Two of them now, right? Because there was two helping him with the truck.
Yep.
No, I think those were just boosters.
No, I think he has two of them. There's two.
Are there two of them? Oh, he had a baby.
It's Red Wing Jr. It's Red Fox Jr. It's fine. I think this has been a delightful chat about the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. If you have your own thoughts and opinions that you want to share with us, please do so by going to our social media and commenting. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We are on Instagram. We're everywhere that you want to be. Not yet OnlyFans. We haven't gotten to that point yet for that content. But, hey, you never know. Times are tough. anywho. But just share your opinions with us. We'd love to hear them. If you would like to follow us on the internets, you can go to flameonshow.com and scroll to the bottom, and there are icons there where you can click on, or you can just go to the different sections, and you'll find all of the links to our different social media platforms right there on our website. You can also just hit up Linktree, linktr.ee/flameonshow, and there are links for everything from our Twitch channels to our social media, to our website, to where you can buy merch. All of that is on our Linktree, link in bio. And we would love to see you help support us on our Patreon. We are, like I said at the beginning of this episode, June 1st, we will have new patron levels. They will be debuting in about a week from when this episode goes live, so middle-ish of May. They will be up there, so you can switch over if you are a current patron to a new platform and take advantage of one of our delightful new perks that will be there for you. Or you can become a brand new patron at patreon.com/flameonshow. And with that being said, thank you, gentlemen, for being a part of this Falcon and Winter Soldier, or I'm sorry, Captain America and the Winter Soldier conversation. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with a brand new roundup of the pop culture that we are enjoying in the month of May, 2021. Deuces.
Bye.
Bye.
Are you a podcaster or a future podcaster? Then you should know about Acast. The world's best podcasters work with Acast, including the one you're listening to right now. And anyone can join and start podcasting with us. It's easy. We have everything you need to host and grow your show and share it across every podcast app out there. You know what else? You can make money from it too. Visit acast.com/hosting to find out more and get started for free. Acast. For the stories.